trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Okay, here we go, episode 44 of the In Tech We Trust podcast. And lining up beside me today, we've got four people. Top left on my Skype screen, Mark Farley. How's it going, Mark?
Hey now, it's going great, except I don't have a beer in front of me.
What is with that?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm in my cube at work, no beer.
Yeah, would that be non-legit at work then? Is that why?
I don't know. I haven't started cracking it yet. I should see if I can do a Tej Ale in my Tej Ale cube every afternoon.
That would be interesting. Next up, I've got Gabriel. How goes it, Gabriel?
It goes well. I was just kind of asking, you know, what kind of startup are you that don't have a keg reader in the office?
I know. Don't all storage startups have, like, the obligatory old EMC Symmetrics that's been turned into a beer cooler?
Something along those lines?
I'm going to have to, yeah. I think we want to find a NetApp machine and do it.
Much better. Sniggering in the background there. Rick?
Hey now. Let's get it on. I'm without a beer as well, so Mark's not going to have Tej Ale Tuesday or Tej Ale Thursday for a while in the cube, but I'm on East Coast time. I'm totally welcome to have a beer right now at home, but unfortunately, I'm out, and I think I'm going to have to hit wine tonight. We had that comment on Twitter. Bro was tired of us talking about beer all that time, so I'm going with a Rioja tonight, Marques de Riscal from Spain. I have this nice red I've had for probably 4 years in the cooler. It's actually really time to use it, so I'm going with wine tonight.
Cool, and our special guest today, very, very special guest, John Troyer.
Woohoo!
Hey. Mark, I thought you were going to do trumpet sounds.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be. This is John Troyer. I'm really pleased to be on the show. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, John, we're absolutely stoked to have you on the show. You know, I'm totally sure that everybody who listens to the show knows everything about you. But just for those who don't, let's, you know, maybe a quick background on who you are. And, you know, I think it'd be great to get an update on what's going on with you, because it's been a long time since you've been at VMware. You've had a lot of little things going on. You've got the Geek Whisperers thing going on. You've got Tech Reckoning. I think we want to talk about that. So go on, let's just dive into it. What's going on with you, John?
Sure. I mean, for folks that don't know me, I was at VMware for almost 9 years doing podcasts and various sorts of things and the vExpert program and blogging and social media and all that sort of good stuff. It was very sad to leave. It's been just a little bit over a year now. VMware and be on my own. I've started Tech Reckoning, which is an independent IT community trying to do some of the sort of the same things. Its instantiation is more or less a newsletter that I write more or less every week. I'm working on one right now where I talk about the news, tech news, and give my thoughts on it, much like you guys do here. And then also the big thing, though, we've got our first event coming up in September called The Reckoning, where we're going to pull people here to Half Moon Bay just to talk about the people of technology, not so much technology. So it's going to be the same kinds of people that like to talk about the stuff that this podcast talks about, but we're going to talk about careers, and we're going to talk about how to do IT better and what's the role of IT and why on earth do we have jobs anyway and what the heck are we doing here? So anyway, so if you're interested, go check it out. Go to techreckoning.com.
And you're going to have The Reckoning.
And The Reckoning. It sounds awfully judgmental, frankly. I don't love it.
It sounds like a horror movie or something of biblical proportions.
I had to change the hashtag to The Reckoning 15 because there is a horror movie called The Reckoning. So that's coming out this year.
Funny sideways hashtag dilemma. There's a Instagram hashtag right now of VMworld that is, I think her name is Veronica Modesta. She's an erotic amputee model. It's worth checking out, friends.
What?
I'm not making this up.
Are you on
VMworld on Instagram?
You couldn't make that up.
You got a link for that?
You can't link a hashtag on Insta, but you can go check it out.
And in podcasting arenas, I with my friends Amy and Matt, we do the Geek Whispers, where we do talk about IT careers and technologists, and again, what talking about people's careers and what worked, what didn't. And we should probably have all you guys on because you all have interesting stories to tell.
You guys are a great trio. Oh, man. The Geek Whisperers are the best.
Thanks. Everybody go listen. I think you guys are a great podcast as well. Let's just spend the whole hour complimenting each other.
Backslapping. You know what, though? We have talked on quite a few podcasts here, I think, about career-type stuff, you know, what would be the perfect job interview and what would be, like, the worst interviews and, you know, horror sacking stories and stuff like that. And I think once or twice we've said we should do, like, a collection of those in one of our shows sometime. That would be pretty cool.
Get some anonymous confessors on.
Yeah. Hey, on the Tech Reckoning and the event that you've got coming up, I did check it out earlier on, and I was really pleased to see, actually, you've got Mark Toomey speaking there. I mean,
I did.
He's just like a legend. Honestly, one of the smartest, wittiest guys. He's just, I can sit and listen to him pretty much all day long. Great scoop there.
Thanks. He was one of the first people I asked. Not because I thought he would be able to, he was particularly an expert on the subject, but because I thought he would be really funny. And one of the topics is like how to get stuff as a technologist, how to get stuff done and how to be an entrepreneur. And I figure like if you can last that long at EMC and get stuff done from Ireland, you must know something.
Yeah. Well, I think I know what one of his answers to getting stuff done would be. I don't think the guy sleeps.
No, he just washes his underwear.
Oh, yeah.
I heard he doesn't even take it off to do that. He leaves it on. So. He just goes in the pool. That's where I was going with it.
Throw the guy a bone. Come on. Hey, John, I do have a question, right? So you were at VMware for a long time, and, you know, from an outsider's perspective, you had a really good thing going there. You really developed one of, if not the best, communities going. How's it been for you since you've left there, though? Has it been the right move, do you think, in hindsight?
Oh no, I'm having a blast. I'm working with a lot of different companies, doing consulting on community programs, on influencer programs, on how to just to talk to people like human beings. And, you know, companies need help with that. So that's been a lot of fun. And, it's really opened up my world, right? Too much of the time, IT people get stuck in these silos. You go to VMworld, you just go to VMUGs, you just do VMware things, or you just do Cisco things, or you just do EMC things or whatever. HP, Dell. And so it's been really cool. Now that I've been out of VMware, I am suddenly safer. I'm not as scary to some people. So I have people from the other silos being, you know, coming up and talking to me now. So Microsoft people wouldn't give me the time of day before, but, you know, now we're having some great conversations. So stepping out of the vendor realm has helped me, be a part of more conversations. It's been great.
All right, then. So, what have we got on the agenda for today on the tech news? Couple of things. So Google finally adds Windows Server support to its Google Cloud platform, and Rackspace, the once OpenStack company, now managed cloud company, I think, are now reselling support for Azure Cloud. So I don't really know. Offering to manage your cloud for you? Not sure. On the Google adding Windows Server support to its cloud platform, right, we talk here all the time that Google's like miles behind Amazon Web Services and Microsoft when it comes to infrastructure as a service and stuff. At least in our opinions, it is, right? You know what? I'm not an expert on Google Cloud Platform, like by a country mile or anything, but I'm just staggered that it's, what is it? It's like July 2015, and they're only now letting you spin up Windows Server instances in their cloud platform. I mean, that's like ridiculous, right? Half the world surely runs on Windows. And, you know, we always say, one of the areas where they're massively, massively lagging behind is that kind of enterprise quality or the appeal to traditional enterprises. And if they've not even supported Windows Server, I mean, how can they expect really to compete in that kind of a market? It's insane, right?
Yeah, it seems pretty crazy. I imagine they never, ever really wanted to pay Microsoft any license fees, but now they're paying them probably plenty. They were already playing them plenty for phone stuff. You know, these companies that just sue each other to smithereens, and now they have a new playing field for getting into each other's shorts.
Yeah, it's a very funky competition, right? I mean, there's Azure, which has that type of Windows compute service, right? But then if you look at the Google Cloud Platform, it's very much a mission statement thing, right? Should I give, in a way, money to my direct competitor to enable a new line of business for me to make money? I mean, think about the inception moment when that happens, because you have to go to the SPLA licensing model. They probably had a whole bunch of back and forth on the terms of that agreement, right? So, but you know what? The rest of it was ready, right? So why make the rest of it wait? And then the mission statement, the philosophical bit, I doubt the technology was a problem.
Yeah, you know, the negotiation for this probably went way back into long before Ballmer left the company, right? It's probably taken this long to just get the licensing done. My guess is Google's wanted to do it for years.
Yeah, and it's not cloud versus – it's not only cloud versus cloud. It's Bing versus search too, right? So it's like a double competitive interest in a sense. And there might even be more down the – well, there's Office and then Google Docs. I mean, there's a lot of competition between the two brands, probably more than people would immediately identify. And that's just three off the top of my head.
Isn't the ding on Google always been, though, that Google Cloud is more about Google than its clients?
Yeah,
in which
definitely,
case,
yeah.
This coming so late is not that much of a surprise, right? They're not that concerned about Windows internally. Why would you need it? So now they're just getting around to it.
Yeah, just run a Chromebook. Yeah, who needs Windows laptops? Yeah. Do you guys remember the videos that Microsoft did about Google coming in for an interview or something? Those were hilarious.
No, I don't.
Oh, they're like, so you can just change it anytime? Yeah. It was very much that Mac versus Windows thing. Uh-huh. But there are a great series of videos that Microsoft produced kind of knocking Google. I'll pull those up in the notes.
Oh, man, do that.
Well, I do think, though, that one of the unrecognized reasons that VMware succeeded back in the day, this was 10 years ago now, was its Windows support. Now, it's not 10 years ago, so I don't know how important Windows support is now compared to the other hypervisors. You know, at the time, it was Xen and stuff. You know, I think that Windows support, not just the technical support, but the support of the whole ecosystem. So I don't know. I think you can spin up Windows on Amazon. You can spin up Windows a lot of different places. I think Windows in 2015, do you think it's an accelerator? Because a lot of people still use Windows. Us geeks here in Silicon Valley kind of forget that.
Oh, I'd say so, because, I mean, if you want to appeal to the enterprises, they're all running Windows, right? If you're an enterprise and you're looking to choose a cloud platform to start deploying your apps against, Windows is like, it's a must-have, surely.
Well, it is, but it's important to note it's not only. It's we've got it all, right? We've got some enterprise Linux builds. We've got Windows Server builds, right? And it might be some bizarre other OSs, like especially RISC computing and all, especially the further you go up the enterprise. But basically, it's a gate. You know, well, I can only do this real estate of my data center in these platforms. Well, that's kind of a problem because I got all of that. So, Windows is a big deal. Windows Server. Well, not so much Windows Server, but then some of the apps. How many things that are important run on SQL Server? You know, that's a big deal in my opinion.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's what you're seeing that's what you're seeing also with Rackspace, and the reason, you know, they worked on this for 18 months to get their Azure-based cloud supported and up and running, because customer demand was pushing for things like SQL workloads, Windows workloads on their hosted solution. I mean, the thing about Windows and Google support seems interesting to me is, like, you know, did they announce that back in December of 2014?
Yeah, they did for beta.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, their press release, you go back to December 8th, 2014, is fairly specific in what it's going to do for Windows 2008 R2 support for Data Center Edition running on Google CWS. So, you know, or the Cloud Workspace Suite. You know, some of the different tools in there. I mean, to me, this doesn't seem like that revolutionary or big of a deal. I mean, it's Google hosting has a specific niche in my view, and it's not the common customer base that's going to go out and leverage it that we would see traditionally go into an AWS or an Azure space, even though they have a very large cloud operating platform. It's not their core competency. It's not something that runs their business. In fact, I'd be curious to see the breakout in terms of revenue, what that cloud computing aspect is doing. But unlike Amazon, who basically built an online business and then took that business model and expanded it to support workloads for other people, that's never been Google's desire.
No, but surely they want a slice of the pie that Amazon and Microsoft are taking in the infrastructure as a service space, right?
I guess it just depends on how much white space they can put inside whatever platform they're leveraging.
Yeah, I get
that's a
that's pretty subtle, but I think that yeah, you,
it's a subtle knock. I mean, because every Google product I've ever used, I mean, come on, like 20% of the screen has to be white space.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? They've got to have a bunch of infrastructure from like Google Plus and stuff that they're going to be retiring soon. So,
yeah,
that's mean. I actually just had a really good conversation on Google Plus today. Come on.
The only time I have to go into Google Plus anymore is because, you know, we use Google Docs internally and it pops up every now and then. Massively failed platform. I mean, I never really drove a lot of business or a lot of discussion. I mean, I use Google Plus for Hangouts, and that's about it.
And now it gets in the way of YouTube on occasion. You want to do something on YouTube, and Google Plus gets in the way of that, too.
It's just a dog, right? They need to flog that thing.
There were a few communities that came up. There's some communities of photographers there and some things like that. But, yeah, pretty niche. It never really took off widely.
Hey, I had a thought about this whole Microsoft-Google thing. I wonder if there was like a technology trade in the background. Like, you know, maybe Google's going to have Windows Server, and maybe Windows now can get like self-driving cars, you know, and they'll go back to doing voice control so you can like yell and scream at your car while you drive it around. I mean, wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't it be from Microsoft? You could scream at your car like you're Steve Ballmer. Drive, you drive, drive, drive!
Yeah, and what happens when it crashes? Is that just a blue screen crash, or is that like a...
Oh, blue screen! Oh,
yeah.
Oh, blue screen of death for a car.
Can't miss a car on Tuesday for updates. Or something.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You know, I always make a point of taking a picture of the blue screen of death at any airport terminal that I see because they always pop up on occasion.
Or bank teller machines and things like that. Yeah, that's always kind of worried me when I've been at like an ATM and I've seen messages like cannot find DHCP server. Clearly, it's running Windows NT in the background or a blue screen of death. I'm like, I'm sure if I trust my card in there. I know exactly.
Hardened, lightweight, customizable, does all kinds of cool things.
Speaking of which, friends, today we're recording on the 15th of July. Yesterday, Windows Server 2003 went out of support. So if you see it in the wild, ding, 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 bad IT.
Yeah, definitely.
You still see 2000. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's a good thing all those XP boxes are gone too, huh?
Yeah, because they just got all of their antivirus cut off today too.
You know what? Actually, at the end of the month, doesn't Windows 10 go live? Pretty sure that I'm due to get an email from Microsoft on the 29th about my apparently free upgrade to Windows 10. I saw that today.
I believe that's correct.
The blogger's privilege or something, or for everybody?
You mean you don't have the annoying little window down in the bottom right?
Yeah, that's
corner.
It. That's where
it's
I saw it this
there.
Morning.
Jesus. Cannot disable it. I mean, there's like some tutorial out there on how to go through and remove that thing. I'm like, really? It's almost as bad as Apple forcing you to have the Apple Watch app on your phone.
July 29th is scheduled general availability to end users. Apparently, it is in the final build, which is out to partners, especially around the hardware, OEM drivers, those types right now. So it is close.
Oh, exciting, I tell you. Magic. Hey, I do have a couple of genuine questions again around the Google and the Microsoft thing, right? Is it realistic, right, to expect Google to continue just to, like, print money effectively from its advertising business off of the back of search and stuff like that? Or are we going to get to a point where business units like the cloud services and stuff that it offers are going to have to start stepping up to the plate and, you know, turning a decent profit and things going forward? I don't want to say to keep the company viable, right? That's ridiculous, okay? But at some point, surely, they've got to have other irons in the fire, because I don't know what happens when somebody else comes along with a decent search alternative and suddenly, you know, there's not a monopoly going on there.
Well, they've got to be making money on Android on their phone business because they're now doing the whole thing.
I mean, unless that search feature is read your mind, I can't see anybody eclipsing the Google search system. I mean, talk about monopoly entrenchment.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying...
I mean, I'm not using AltaVista anymore, am I?
No. And I can't see anybody doing it. But surely, you know, somebody could come out of the left field or anything can happen. It's got to be a massive risk for a huge old company like that to be... I'm speaking here as if I'm in the know, okay? And I'm totally not. But to be so reliant on effectively one product. And then you look at Microsoft and Amazon and the kind of profits that they're making off of their cloud platforms and things,
why wouldn't they want to be involved with that and you know, raking in the cash alongside those guys?
I mean, I can see that, but I also kind of see Google is more than just, you know, you kind of think of it like I use a phone to call and communicate with people. I use Google to do the internet. I mean, it's so ingrained into, you know, your daily patterns, your muscle memory, and all the things that you do. Barring, like I said, some kind of complete crazy-ass game changer that totally blows up search, or a complete drop of the market, and then, like, everyone collectively on the planet deciding not to pay for Google AdWords. It's become, you know, synonymous with the internet. I don't search for anything. I Google for things.
Do you ever enter a URL, or do you just Google it?
I just it's right in Chrome. I just type it in because it's going to find it.
But user behavior on mobile, though, is changing. Mobile ads behavior is different. Mobile search behavior is different. I mean, when you talk about something really big would have to change. I mean, mobile is big. It's a bomb dropped on all this stuff that was built for the web.
In hindsight, looking at, you know, at Facebook buying or WhatsApp or whoever, you know, buying into those spaces for mobile, in hindsight, you know, I'm like, boy, that sure was genius, man. I mean, to get that penetration in things like even Instagram, and thinking that, you know, for $18 or $13 billion, you're crazy. But it's, you know, think about how huge mobile has become and how much more search and how much more interactivity happens on your mobile now versus PC.
You know what? So I was at my brother's at the weekend, and he's got an 8-year-old daughter, and I've got a 9-year-old daughter. Well, I've got two others as well, they're a bit younger. My kids have got iPads, and my brother's 8-year-old daughter got a laptop. And it's like, a laptop? Like, come on, live in the now. Maybe it'd be good for school and stuff going forward, but, you know, most kids I see these days, you know, they're constantly playing on either their own phones, their parents' phones, or iPads, or tablets and things. Very rare I see a young kid that's, like, on a laptop. In fact, just today, I had to look after my middle daughter on my own. What a terrible thing, actually. While my wife was out.
For her.
Absolutely, yeah. And so I just loaded up Amazon Prime, and I was, like, scrolling through it with her saying, you know, what do you want to watch on the instant video? And she's trying to use a finger to scroll through on the screen, and I'm like, I have to tell her, like, three or four times, this screen doesn't
work that way.
Like, no, yeah, it doesn't work like that. So mobile, yeah, I mean, maybe that's going to be the thing that, well, don't kill off Google. I mean, is it possible to Google something on Bing? You know, tongue in cheek there, right? But
no, if you're on Bing and you try to access Google, you just need to type in Google in the search bar and it'll finally take you there. But if you use Bing search to try to get to Google, Bing keeps trying to bring you back to Bing.
Okay, so here's a piece of new information statistically. I'm looking at their investment filings. Year ended 2013, other revenues, which is not the website and ad type stuff, was 8% of Google's revenue in 2013. End of 2014, it was 10%. And Q1 of this year, unaudited, is another 10%. So by the numbers, yeah, and their numbers, that's not – well, okay, I'll take – hold
me
on
too.
How much is that?
Yeah,
that's that is quite a lot money. 1.7 billion dollars, for the year, $6.3 billion in other. $6.3 billion in other for 2014.
That's a big number for us, right, Rick? And I totally get that, right? But that's not going to keep the investors.
That's as big as VMware. Their other bucket is roughly am I right, John? Wasn't VMware about $6 billion annual revenue, somewhere around there?
In the ballpark, yeah. I think it's a little higher now, but yeah.
So Google's other is VMware. Let me put that in perspective for you.
It'd be interesting to know how their expenses are laid out against those profits,
sales.
You know, I bet that small part of the business has most of the expenses too.
They got free bikes on campus.
Free food as well, yeah. I want to go work there.
Flying jets around the world.
No, the Google bikes, seriously. You just walk up and grab a bike.
I know. When I worked at Microsoft, I used to wander over there and, like, steal them.
Awesome.
Cool. All right. Does anybody have anything to say on the Rackspace bit? So those guys, as far as I can understand, they're kind of shifting their tack. They can't compete with the kind of scales that Amazon and Microsoft and Google can in that kind of renting out cloud servers and stuff like that. So seem to be pivoting to become much, much more of a managed cloud service company.
I guess a lot less focus on OpenStack these days as well, especially with this announcement that they're going to be reselling Azure and providing support for Azure. This is a good move for them? Does it matter?
I wouldn't say that their focus is depreciated on OpenStack. I just think that there's a parallel business model that they can approach. Why be one cloud when you could be multiple clouds? And, you know, they've tried to sell themselves over the last year and a half or so. Didn't really get any buyers or traction. So, you know, a renewed effort to bring in alternate streams of revenue and other partnerships to keep them more viable or make them a more attractive acquisition target is definitely the strategy that they want to take.
It's got to change the mixture of their margins, though, right? Because essentially you don't have a product, a service offering that's based on your data centers and servers and things like that you bought. This is a services offering. So there's got to be a couple of points of margin in there on top of what Microsoft is getting. So the question is that a viable business model? Can they be a managed services layer on top of everybody? They'd like to be known as that managed services company. I mean, it really is a mixture of, mixture of consulting and ramp up and support. You know, they call it fanatical support, but it's really consulting. So I don't know. I don't know if they can pull it off, but it's an interesting model.
You know what? I might be having a senior moment here, so totally correct me if I'm wrong. But has anybody made a successful business out of partnering with Microsoft in the past? Or have they not just been, ripped to shreds or acquired or...
Intel. I've heard of a company called Intel.
Oh, yeah. Fair enough.
A good long-term example is Citrix, especially in software.
What?
That's a really interesting relationship. The Citrix mm-hmm. and Microsoft relationship is one of smoky backroom discussions.
Very cooperative, but long-term software, it's worked really well. And I Intel's a good one, hardware for sure.
Well, even the PC OEMs, Rick, right? Even the PC OEMs for a time were doing great business.
Yeah, till that damn Surface.
Yeah.
Well, but no, that had to change. That was going to happen anyways. And if it isn't the Surface, it would be the iPad, honestly.
Well, I'm pretty sure they killed off the Secret Windows Phone app line of business, too. So.
I do think they killed Secret Windows Phone app, yeah. I've had a secret negotiation with them.
Okay, so can I take that I'm wrong there?
Yes, you're wrong.
It is possible to make a successful business out of partnering with Microsoft, because... I get Intel, but they're like this big old huge company that have been around for donkey's years and, totally part of everything to do with technology. And okay, Citrix, I mean, they're not exactly the greatest example of a high-flying business these days, are they?
Well, you're not – I mean, what do you mean by successful partnering? I mean, it's not going to overtake but enable growth and floor. I mean, my company's done really well partnering with Microsoft. I mean, a lot of ISVs do, but I mean, what's the measure of success? Is it bringing more business? Is it joint promotion? Is it, how would you define it being successful?
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking of a long-term viable business, to be honest. And yeah, okay, I step back. Clearly, I am wrong. Lots of examples there. Yeah, I'm educated.
Well, let me give you an example that probably everybody would use, and that's Adobe. There's a lot of apps that run on Windows, and they have to be a partner of some sort to do that, like uh-huh. Photoshop and Reader. I mean, if Adobe didn't partner with Microsoft, those Photoshop people would all be Mac. But I know a number of people that they can do what they want. There's an example kind of in the endpoint space. I think you just really need to. Microsoft's a big company. They got a lot of things. A lot of people probably use enhanced SQL Server tools. A lot of Exchange people do archiving and e-discovery. There's a whole ecosystem just really with every app and every offering from Microsoft, honestly.
So I'm now totally embarrassed of what I said before.
You might want to take another podcast, bro.
No, it's cool. I don't care about that. All right, then.
But let's cut you a little slack, though, too, Nigel, right? If you look at it from a storage perspective, we talk about Exchange. For how long was it that, Microsoft didn't authorize, officially the use of SANS for Exchange?
Oh, yeah.
Just the stupid stuff, right?
They still don't want you to do it.
Yeah,
NFS is not supported.
So there are some areas where, you know, partnering with them has just been ridiculous and stupid and backwards, you know, right? So you have to pick your spots.
As long as you don't have something that competes with one of their internal champion platforms or something along those lines, you're fine to partner with them.
Yeah, just don't get into business of writing operating systems. That's the number one rule of partnering with Microsoft.
Fair play. And you know what? They are a totally different company, so it seems these days, under the direction of Satyen. So who knows? It's a brave future for them. Anyway, let's switch gears onto business news now, right? So I've got four items. First up, right, Wall Street Journal, I think, were the first to report that Chinese government-owned, in a way, chip manufacturers looking to buy Micron. They were saying like $23 billion, which would make it the biggest ever Chinese takeover of a U.S. company, though it does seem like that's undervaluing Micron, and you know what, it's probably not going to happen. Also, we've got XIO. They're on a hiring spree following the appointment of new CEO Bill Miller. Why anybody would want to go there, I do not know.
Time's the charm.
Yeah. And then I've got two items of companies that have been invested in at the moment. So Scale Computing, they've just got $18 million in, actually, this is interesting, I thought, it's seventh round of funding.
What?
So taking it, yeah.
Yeah, they took small rounds. They follow a kind of a more subdued model. You know, I mean, I think what was more important about the Scale announcement was the fact that they broached 1,000 customers.
Yep.
Which, you know, that's a good number of customers to have for a platform that, you know, doesn't get the same flash as the Nutanix or Simplivity, but is definitely fairly mature.
So why doesn't it get the same flash then?
They don't have $150 million. I also think that their growth model is very different. The customer base that they approach is very different. And, you know, they've kind of taken that slower. I mean, I still think they're under 100 people in the company.
Well, also remember, they did that 180. They had a storage-only offering, and they've totally just gone different, right?
Right. Well, Pivot 3, too. Pivot 3 is re-engaging in the hyper-converged community as well. I'm starting to see some of these people that have been around for a while who may not have had, that high-flyer status start to re-engage. And then you're starting to see a whole bunch of other people just jump into that hyper-converged marketplace. I mean, DDN's jumping into it. You have Atlantis jumping into it. It seems like everybody is now, quote-unquote, hyper-converged to some extent. And even I heard hyper-converged backup the other day, which made me kind of barf a little bit in my mouth. But, ride the hype cycle, ride the hype train. You know, I still don't see hyper-converged in the totality being more than a $2 billion market right now.
Well, I think you heard hyper-converged backup in the context probably of Rubrik, which we've been talking about. So I hope you've been throwing up for weeks.
I haven't been paying attention when we talk about backup.
You know what? I just made a very interesting observation here about Scale. Reading the most recent press release, blah, blah, blah. Distribution network with key partners such as CDW, I get that, and Dell. Dell? Key partner?
Maybe they're transitioning to the Dell FX platform off of Supermicro.
Yeah, interesting.
That would be a smart move on their part. It's a... You know, it's the Equilogic versus the Compellent in terms of positioning, right? You have something that's a little more downstream. So it's, you know, if they have an OEM or they reach some kind of agreement with Dell to resell on their behalf, they can position that into spaces where Nutanix is too pricey.
I wonder if Dell's ever going to go shopping over to scalecomputing.com.
Dell doesn't have any money to go shopping.
Oh, that's right.
The D stands for debt, remember?
That's right.
Or probably to train their salespeople to know how to sell a solution.
You said it. You used to work there. That's okay.
Just saying.
But no, I mean, I think, you know, I think they have. You know, maybe, let's face it. Dell has a humongous software portfolio based upon the purchasing of Quest and all the assets that came along with that. They have, you know, a relatively decent and very nice server line that a lot of people like. I mean, the quality issues of, you know, the 2007 to 2009 time frame is long gone, kind of the same way that GM went. You know, they're still a major player in this space. You know, they just don't get the same kind of, you know, props or focus that an HP gets, primarily due to their size compared to those other other systems.
Well, and they also might be zeroing in. On, and this is a good thing, right? Identifying a persona. You know, maybe they're zeroing in on the SMB or those types of things, right? They're not going to because, like, honestly, the other ones might have a better way of winning an enterprise battle if you try to – you need people, you need money to do that, right? That type of stuff. But maybe they're zeroing in –
the ones being Nutanix and people like that.
Yeah, yeah. Or HP's offering a hypervisor converged storage in the case of vSAN, EvoRail, EvoRack, right? But honestly, if you're – talking to some people, they're all the same, even though they're all materially different and bring their own differences. Maybe Scales is zeroing in on a persona. And honestly, you know what? They've been around a long time. That's a very good sign. There's some that just aren't making it, you know.
But is it a good sign, right? So they've been around for 9 years. They've had these seven rounds. They've got, like, well, according to Crunchbase, 61 million in those seven rounds. I was going to, like, diss on XIO for being around and just lingering around forever and never really doing anything. Yet when it comes to Scale, and don't get me wrong, like, even I think that Scale are a way cooler and better company than XIO. But on the one hand, we're saying, you know what, they've been around for ages. They've been around for ages and haven't really done anything. But then when it comes to Scale, we're like, ah, that's a good thing. How come?
You know, I like to focus on, you know, when I'm evaluating a company, when I'm looking at a company, I'm like, what is the potential exit here? Is there a way for the investors to recoup their money? And is there a great demand for the investors to recoup their money? I'd have to pull up the Crunchbase page to look at it. But, you know, if they took money from nine different vendors or different VCs, they may have different pressures coming on. If they take money from the same VC over and over again, then there may be more pressure on the board to actually find a buyer or find an IPO or some ability to go up there. I mean, there's companies out there. Look at Jawbone. Jawbone's been around for, what, two decades, and they're still privately held, and they've taken 14 rounds of funding.
Wow. That's got to be close to a record.
And then, and, you know, and you read a few interviews here and there where companies, you know, people are saying, you know, it's like, if I had the opportunity to keep it private and just get venture capital funding, I would have done it. There are organizations out there that have taken massive amounts of money that, you know, may be too expensive to buy, but may have a better run of it going private and getting to a point where they make enough money to pay back their investors.
In Scale's case, it is a venture buffet. There's all kinds of parties on that list, so it's not just one.
And you know what? They're not like the kind of regular ones that we see all the time. When I looked at it, I didn't think there were any big hitters on there. So, because I had one other story on here about Delphix landing 75 million, right? And when I looked at Delphix, you know, their investors were like Greylock and Lightspeed and Credit Suisse and Fidelity and Battery and all, you know, the kind of people that we hear all the time. But when I looked at the investors in Scale, I was like, ooh, yeah, you know what? Don't really know of any of those guys. And it's not like they're the same guys coming back all the time either. I mean, this time it was led by a company called ABS and they're first-time investors in them. Well, at least when I read Crunchbase, looked like they were first-time investors.
Yeah, and that's usually not a good sign if the investors that were in earlier are not continuing to be in, but... who knows? I don't want to be judgmental about Scale. You know, it was for a while it looked like they were going to be one of three companies in the race, but they didn't really seem to compete with Nutanix and Simplivity. They just dropped off.
And then there's like Maxta. That's a good one.
Yeah, but you have to look at, you know, what are they using that money for? Is that money being – are they at this point now where it's like, all right, it's that shit or get off the pot moment, and we're like, let's take this $18 million and ramp up our sales and marketing force and – build our pipeline to get noticed to get bought? Or is this, you know, this $18 million helps us stay viable for the next 2 years because we're really still super small and have a low burn rate? You know, look at Nutanix and Simplivity. Nutanix is clipsing, what, close to 1,000 employees now? Simplivity is shooting for 800 by this year. I think Scale is still sub 80.
Yeah, different game entirely.
Right, different game entirely. And, you know, at an organization whose starting price is at 25K list, it goes up as high as 70. It's a very different market segment. And frankly, they have a very different product compared to the other ones. It's Hyper-V, or no, sorry, it's KVM-based. You know, they build a lot of intellectual property around what they have there, but they're going after a different market segment than those others do. And, you know, that SMB, smaller organization sale, you know, it's been a while since I sold into that space, but, you know, sales times and average deal size can really impact them. And I, I don't see them as much now, but, you know, who knows? Maybe they do take this funding and use that to expand their sales and public personnel.
Maybe they'll take it to Vegas.
That's always an option. Probably not legal, but...
Should we talk about XIO then? So those guys are on a hiring spree at the moment. Quite why anybody would want to go there, it's probably a bit harsh. I don't know. They strike me as being just one of the boring, boring storage companies out there.
Well, you could be doing backup, right, if you want to talk boring.
No. Yeah, that's true.
Carry on.
Maybe that's their next pivot.
Yeah, I mean, for a time there, I mean, I still think they have a good message around Microsoft integration. But is that enough to carry you forward? I mean, look at GridStore. They're another one that's like, oh, we're hyper-converged from Microsoft. I'm like, does anybody running Hyper-V want that? That's not a huge market to go after. But, you know, I mean, if I remember correctly, I read it was like this was their 10th CEO in 14 years or 14th right. CEO in 10 years. Continuity is such a big deal for any organization. And if your change of leadership happens that frequently, you have to go and look at what's causing that. Now, I haven't looked at the board and the board makeup and what's, you know, do you have a board that is so fickle that if somebody doesn't come in and make a change in 6 weeks that, all right, well, now you're on the chopping block? And what do you expect when you have that much churn at the top? I don't expect it to be, you know, something that's going to be really blowing up the whole world, because by the time that guy's come on board and done the analysis and kind of tried to impact and put his stamp on the company in terms of direction, he's been fired and now somebody else's new is coming on. So these wounds are all self-inflicted in my viewpoint.
Well, you know, you got to remember with storage, and this is something that I like to say, is that you can always buy lesser expensive storage. You know, the menu of storage today is incredible. And yeah, you're right. They do like to shift their leadership, but I think they're, you know what, they need to be there, right? That keeps price down, it keeps competition up, keeps EMC in check. In fact, let's see here, VP of North American Sales for XIO just comes to them from EMC. The CFO comes to them from EMC. Not like they've got their targets set or anything like that, but they're not going to take them down, but they're going to keep them in check, and I really think the market needs that.
They're going to keep them in check? Really?
Well, just no, having the options. The fact that there's always got to be more storage. We cannot get to the two types of array vendors market.
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah,
oligopoly,
yeah.
Oligopoly, all right? We need a big Wild West. We need innovation. We need a whole bunch of people doing a little bit of stuff different. I think in storage, I think in everything, especially kit, I really think we need those types of things. So, you know, granted, I'm not going to go try it unless they ship me one for free, because I am out of storage at home. But that's another story. But, you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, the market needs it, in my opinion. And let them be hungry. Maybe, you know, something will come of it.
Yeah, so I've got a little bit of perspective on this. Bill Miller is a pretty good guy. Bill was on our board at Quadra, and Bill was an investor and on the board at XIO. And Bill was not gunning for that job. He had to backfill it. That was not something that he wanted to do, but he needed to be done, and he was an investor in the company. Right? I think this is a case where company is, in some respects, had an incredible amount of bad luck, and they've had some terrific people associated with that company over the years. You know, started with Phil Soren and Larry Asman, and Larry Asman is a terrific storage engineer, They came from Tricord. They started XIOTech. They went on to Compellent. And I'm not sure if Larry's still working or not, but a really good guy. Anyway, XIOTech turned into XIO over the years. Richie Larry, the guy that put together the cluster storage controller for deck machines back in the 90s, was there for a while doing inventive things. Another guy, Steve Sokola, I think, had deck background, and then it was at Seagate, and I don't want to go into much detail about it. Steve had a horrible personal tragedy happen to him while he was helping to run that company. I mean, it's just one of those things that nobody ever wants to have happen to them, and that took a dent. That created some amount of damage for the company as well, right? He just had tough things to deal with. I'm not sure what happened with Richie Larry there, where that stuff went. They've had some inventive things. They had Alan Atkinson. Alan is a creative guy. I'm not sure what happened to Alan, but it's been a star-crossed place. I'll just say that. But things go kind of funny, right? And I want to make this comment too, and it's just part of startup life. I'm not sure when Bill became an investor, if he's been there a long time or not. Bill had been at Storage Networks, and had, you know, even though Storage Networks was inevitably unsuccessful, it was a big company at one point.
It IPO'd. I mean, that was...
Yeah, and they had all that...
During the dot-com rush,
when it was really... pretty much technically impossible to have storage service providers. You couldn't really provide the services that you'd like to. But there you go. An attempt was made. There were a couple companies that did that. And they IPO'd. It was backed by Goldman Sachs, so it had a lot of good backing. Anyway, 15 years later, here's Bill, you know, being a CEO of a company again when he never wanted to do it. There were probably multiple times during the existence of XIO where they went out for money to keep the company alive, and in the long run, they probably would have been better off if they had shut it down. And I think you've got a company here that is—it's just showing, you know, it's battled back, it's existed, it's hung in there, and it's been miserable, I think, for probably the last 5-6 years, maybe longer than that.
Do you feel dirty telling a story in the cube of another storage company?
I never. Well, no, I don't. Okay. I mean, this is the way it goes. Well, I know
that's the way it is.
Whispering.
No doubt. I just.
No, I mean, and so the thing that happens, right, is Bill was on the board at Quadra, and he was there to try to help us raise money and introduce us in the industry. But as it happened, when Quadra was under a crunch earlier this year, Bill was really unavailable to help us, and he was the only, you know, external board member. The other two board members were, you know, the founder of Quadra and the CEO. And the company did not get the external direction that Bill was brought on to bring. I mean, it's just that happens. And that's because Bill was swamped with trying to figure out how to keep XIO going, right? And this happens in startup land. Sometimes, you know, you don't want to have two companies that are in need of expertise and have that expertise pulled one way or another. It happens. So just as a note of caution to entrepreneurs or whatever, you know, dot your I's, cross your T's, and look for ways that things can go wrong. You need to research where people are invested and where they might have to and where they might end up abandoning you.
Yeah, fortunes can change fast. I mean, you mentioned Storage Networks. They had a market cap of $16 billion at one point. Let that one sink in.
Are you serious about that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Remember, they had the backing of Goldman, and that was a big thing.
Okay.
So anyway, what I thought would be interesting would be, you know, we do actually have an ex-CEO on the show today. And he probably... Yeah, I'm like, John, come on.
Yeah, John, come on there. Chirp in.
You are the guy, and you understand a little bit about what this is like, trying to, you know, keep a company going, trying to find an exit and all that. Do you have any comments about what it's like to be in those shoes? You know, should we stay or should we go? Should we, you know, what do you do?
Look, the reason I laughed is our company got up to about 100 people, and we had a company, I started it with a few friends. We ended up raising $25 million in three rounds. This was back in the dot-com days. It was in mobile enterprise space. We were trying to make, you know, SAP, who had just invented their first, like, web apps at that point, trying to squeeze them over, you know, the wire to go to BlackBerry's and go to, you know, Palm 7s. And it was back in the day. So we didn't have product market fit. We didn't really have a pipeline. We weren't really a mature company. I didn't know what I was doing. So I'm not sure that any lessons I learned in wasting $25 million of my investors' money really apply to these storage startups. But it's brutal, right? You know, it's gambling, right? They put money into your company and they, you know, you have to pay it back somehow. So it is definitely not like not having a job or not having a boss. These are investments. You know, they have a portfolio. they are protected against the downfall of a few members of their portfolio, or even most of the members of their portfolio. You only have one roll of the dice. So there are different maximization strategies to try to figure out how to make your money back while making them their money back. And people who've been around the block try not to have only one exit strategy. And I don't know what went on at Quadra, but you know, you try to have more connections than that. You try to have more options than that. You try never to leave yourself holding, just, you know, just having, being forced to take one door. So, I mean, but that's business. That's kind of business. That's kind of life, I guess.
Wow. I never expected to think that that would be coming into play with your new venture known as The Reckoning.
Well, I mean, you know, even at The Reckoning, right? We've all had to do, everybody sells. Everybody's a marketer at some level, even if you're a technologist. And, you know, people don't just hand you money. People are very friendly until you ask them for a check. So you still, even though I'm friends with a lot of people, I have good relationships, I'm providing value to a lot of people, whether it's on the marketing side or whatever I'm doing for people, you know, you still have to prove that you're helping somebody achieve their business objectives for them to pay you money. And finding the right profile of customers and juggling, you know, employees and psychology and momentum and burn rates and capital expenditures. Oh man, you know, there's a reason I'm not taking venture, you know, there's a reason you don't see me involved in venture backed companies right now, right? It's a really hard job. It's really miserable.
It's hard. It's very, very hard. You know, a lot of people look at it like, you know, there's just these handouts out there and some of the companies look like that. But, to your point, you had 25 million. That's a lot. And it was a lot for that time. And it is hard. It's really hard.
I mean, it paid my salary for a couple of years. That was nice.
Can I summarize on the XIO bit, right? So, I mean, it's a really competitive market, okay? And we're saying it's really competitive and hard to get money as well, right? Don't doubt any of those. It just seems like as well at XIO, it doesn't look like it's fun there anymore. And you know what? When you're in a really competitive market space and you're fighting for the oxygen, and you have to work really, really hard to get cash, you've got to be having fun while you're doing it, right? And it just doesn't seem like that's a fun place to be. You know what? I've never been there or anything like that, but it just doesn't have that kind of, I don't know, aura about it that that's like a cool, happening place to be at the moment.
Fun comes from growth.
Yeah.
Fun comes from winning competitive deals and being in the mix and seeing things. When you're not growing and if you're stagnating, it's not fun.
So we should pull the shotgun out and shoot that flailing horse over there, in my opinion.
Well, you know, that's, we're going to leave that up to Bill Miller and probably the friends of Bill that he's bringing in, is my guess of who's coming into the company right now, is people Bill knows that, you know, in some cases may owe him favors or want to do that for him. You know, he's going to have to figure that out. I don't think, nobody else does it. It's up to them. Well, if they run out of money and they can't get any more, there you go.
All right then, guys. Well, thanks for being on the show today. John, thanks again for being our special guest. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me on. I listen to this podcast all the time, usually while walking my dog, but I'm a huge fan. So I have a little fanboy kind of thrill being on the show this week. So thanks again.
It's been great having you on. John, just remind everybody who's listening how they can reach you and contact you and follow you and stuff like that.
Sure thing. I am at Jay Troyer on Twitter, which is a great way of reaching me. And you can see the rest of my details over at techreckoning.com. The conference is September 13th and 14th here in California. You can get there on techreckoning.com. And, you know, it's going to talk about evangelistas. So if you're at all interested in that sort of profession for yourself, check it out.
Hey, and will it be available on YouTube and stuff like that to watch later on?
Indeed it will, but I don't like to say that because I want you to buy a ticket.
No, of course, yeah. It's a bit far from me, that.
Yeah, right, so probably no Periscope either because we have to buy tickets to go.
No way, man. It's I'm into sharing, so it's all going to be – yeah, it's going to be live, in fact. But come. The whole point is to get together, and that conversation, that hallway conversation that we have at other conferences is going to be on the main stage.
You know, it sounds great, John. It sounds like it'll be a really fun event, in a good place at a good time and interesting topics. I recommend it to everybody that's listening.
Interesting speakers as well, to me. Come on, God, dear me.
I know, really.
It should be a lot of fun. Thanks, guys.